And good morning. This is Dr. John McDougall joining you on the Northern California Radio Network. Let's just get right to our guest today. This man is Chief of Division of Preventive and Nutritional Medicine from Beaumont Hospital in Birmingham, Michigan. A man I've known for several years. Matter of fact, I met our guest today when I was in Detroit at Wayne State University giving a talk. As a matter of fact, he invited me to give that talk. And the reason that we became associated is because he wrote some rather unestablished articles on the dietary treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. And it really caught my attention. And I wanted to get to know Dr. Charles Lucas, MD, as you will go on to get to know him also today. Dr. Lucas, hello.
Hi, John. Do we have a good connection? I can hear you poorly.
Well, how about now? How's that?
That's okay.
All right, great. Well, we just have to get all the levers switched. Dr. Lucas, as Chief of Division of Preventive and Nutritional Medicine at Beaumont Hospital in Birmingham, Michigan, what do you spend most of your time doing?
Well, most of my time is spent trying to get people to change their habits, treating their weight problems, treating their diabetes, their blood pressure problems, their cholesterol problems.
Well, what do you think is the greatest motivation for people? Is it heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, or just looking ugly in front of the mirror?
Well, I don't know. You know, I think being afraid. I find that people who do very well generally are those who are absolutely terrified or sick and tired of looking the way they look or feeling the way they feel.
Do you think it takes a level of, I suppose a level of understanding is important, but how about a level of self-worth? Do you notice that in people, that those who generally have a higher level of self-worth do better?
Well, I think that that's probably true, yeah, but I still think that a person has to really want to make the change because they're afraid or they've got some real... I remember one man, for example, who weighed something like 500 pounds when he came to see me, and he had absolutely no money at all. He was destitute and came in on a Friday afternoon, and I knew I had one shot at this guy, and I said, if you don't change your habits, you're going to die within 2 months.
Ooh.
And this guy's been one of the most successful patients I've ever had. I had to do... That was the only behavior modification I needed. He's been a remarkable patient.
And he never asked you where you came up with that figure of 2 months, God.
Well, you know, he had these terrible swollen legs. He was cyanotic. He was in heart failure.
Oh, that's pretty good way
so
of predicting.
So I thought his days were numbered.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told him the truth.
That helps, doesn't it, to tell patients the truth? As a matter of fact, that was the subject of yesterday's radio show, is the fact that I was telling people the truth as I see it. Sometimes it's painful to hear the truth, though.
Oh, I think so. Every once in a while, you have to tell a patient that they're not really measuring up, that maybe they don't really, they're not committed enough. I told that to a lady last night. They're not committed enough to what they're trying to do, what appears that they're trying to do. And she was kind of offended, but I said, well, you know, that's the way it seems to me.
That's right. We got to keep encouraging him and educating him. My guest is Dr. Charles P. Lucas. He's from Michigan, Beaumont Hospital. He's Chief of Division of Preventive and Nutritional Medicine, and a man who I've had great respect for many years. But we're going to get into some subjects of obesity. We're going to get into some discussions of diabetic care, high blood pressure care. And if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, the number to call is 707-270-1350 or 1-800-570-TALK. This is Dr. John McDougall. I'll be back with you in just a few moments. Good morning, this is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Charles P. Lucas. He is from Michigan, Beaumont Hospital, Chief of the Division of Preventive and Nutritional Medicine, and also trained in internal medicine and endocrinology, a man with great experience in terms of diet, lifestyle, and the treatment of obesity and lifestyle-related diseases. He's working on a book now on obesity in relationship to diet and exercise. Dr. Lucas, what kind of diet are you using now to take care of your patients?
It all depends. I think it has to be tailored to the kind of problem they have. If they're morbidly obese, like 100 pounds overweight, we usually recommend initially a formula diet, 600 to 900 calorie formula diet, to get their weight off. And during that time, we do behavior modification. And when they get close to their goal weight, we then put them on lots of vegetables and lots of turkey and fish. And so our diet is primarily, you know, it's mostly vegetables and vegetables and vegetables with turkey and fish thrown into it. And we try to keep them on that for quite a long time and very gradually begin to add other foods. We go to fruits first and some dairies and then some grain products. Because, you know, the overweight person is so susceptible to regaining weight that we try to keep, you know, I don't know if you've been using the term caloric density at all in your writings. But you know, the foods that have the lowest amount of calories per ounce and the low and the highest amount of nutrients per ounce are the traditionally are the vegetables. And I think that those are the foods that make it a lot easier to fill up without overeating in calories.
Why do you start them on the liquid protein phase first as opposed to the maintenance phase, which is a high vegetable diet? Why not just go to that?
Well, because it's difficult for people who have eating disorders, believe me, to do it. At least I find that's the case. The nice thing about the formula diet is it's a very restricted diet. Obviously, there are not a lot of choices. People have found the same is true if you put people on a restricted diet like, you know, turkey, chicken, fish, and vegetables, as a starting diet also. But when you give people too many choices, when there are too many choices, then they begin to eat off target.
Well, let's talk about the formula diets for a minute, because
we rarely
get into that in this show. The formula diets, what we're talking about is the very low calorie, very low carbohydrate, supplemental protein type diets that come in packages or cans. And of course, they've been very popular for many years because they're the ultimate convenience and they do result in tremendous weight loss. But what do you say to critics who challenge you, Dr. Charles Lucas, that the weight regain is almost always there? 90-95% of people regain their lost weight within 2 years, a la Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, well, that's not true. You know, in our clinic, we've now got we've got 3.3 year data, and we have 2 year data.
And
in our clinic, 75% of our patients, 3.3 years average after the formula diet, are averaging 43 pounds of weight loss.
And is that because you get them on a good vegetable diet,
in fat? That's because we do a lot of behavior modification, and we give them a good diet. A no-nonsense diet when they finish, you see.
But they can't stay on these liquid protein diets indefinitely, can they?
Well, the average person loses about 70 pounds.
And then they go off, and then they go on, hopefully, a healthy program.
Well, they go on vegetables and salads and vegetables and that. They stay on that for a long time. So we always say it's like going on the formula diet is like going on mother's milk. And after you come off of that, then we teach you how to eat right from the beginning. So we get them a chance, you know, we sort of wipe the slate clean, and we start them out on what they should be eating, vegetables and salads and then, you know, light, low-calorie meats like turkey and chicken and fish. You know, we also have, for example, we have found that 20% of our patients average 100 pounds of weight loss at 3.3 years. So, you know, our results are excellent. They're not like Oprah Winfrey's results.
Well, they're not typical results, would you say, also in the industry? I mean, published in the industry, it says that 90-95% of people regain lost weight in 2 years, and that's been one of the greatest criticisms, but you've addressed that well in terms of long-term success.
Sure.
But how about, would you address the safety issue? Because, you know, that's always been of great concern, particularly since at one time the early liquid protein diets were associated with 60 deaths, as I understand.
Now, those liquid diets, of course, John, you know that, were made from horses' hooves and animal hides.
What do we make them from now?
It's made from milk protein or egg protein.
So this is better
protein. And they're nutritionally supplemented with minerals and vitamins. And those diets, the original diets, they had no minerals, no vitamins, and they were a very poor quality protein.
So,
and, you know, that's not on the market anymore.
Well,
that was the product that was taken off the market.
Well, that's
several
good.
Years ago.
But
the diets that we have today are really safe. There really is no problem with them. The real problem with the new diets today, are that people, if they don't do it with behavior modification and they don't get a good diet after that, then they're going to gain their weight back. But that would be true no matter what diet you put them on. I mean, if you put them on whatever diet you used, if you don't teach them how to eat differently and exercise, and we find that exercise is probably the most important thing of all.
So it's real important that people understand that this is a modified fast, and you can only stay on a fast for a short period of time. But can we talk a little bit about how people feel on these kinds of diets? Because I've heard mixed reactions. Some people say they feel absolutely wonderful, and some people say they feel cold and nauseated and fatigued. As a matter of fact,
not really.
No.
Patients feel better on these diets than they did before.
How about
quality? We're going to do a study looking at quality of life. You heard about the study that came out just last week on quality of life with these two drugs for blood pressure. We're going to do a study on quality of life also, looking at, because I'm convinced that the quality of life of these people is markedly better while they're on the diet.
How about constipation?
Constipation is no problem because we get them lots of fiber. They take a bran and they take a Metamucil. While they're on the diet, so that's never a problem.
And of course, it's the ultimate in convenience. You don't even have to burn a piece of flesh on two sides, do you?
That's right.
Like the old Atkins and Stillman diet.
It's easy to take, and I think it's nutritionally. In fact, I would bet that most people eat better nutritionally in terms of minerals and vitamins when they're on this than they do when they eat their own food, because, you know, most Americans just don't eat any fruits, and many don't eat fruits and vegetables, and so therefore they don't, the nutritional intake of most Americans is terrible on a regular diet.
And the mechanism, the way these kinds of diets work, is because they introduce ketosis in the patient? Is that correct?
No, I think they work because they're restricted in terms of what people have a choice. It decreases choices. Because one doctor from Cleveland, from Pittsburgh, Dr. Rena Wing, did a study where she tested regular food diets versus these diets. And when regular food diets are equally restricted in terms of choices, they do very well on those.
But they do still limit carbohydrate tremendously, don't they?
Well, you have to limit carbohydrate to some extent, because I think carbohydrate is one of these things that people get addicted to. You know.
But isn't ketosis suppressing the hunger drive a very important part of this?
I think ketosis may be part of the reason, but I think it's largely related to the choice business, that folks have made up their minds they're not going to eat anything else.
This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Charles Lucas, and if you'd like to talk to Dr. Lucas, the number is 707-270-1350 or 1-800-570-TALK. Back with you in just a moment.
Chevy number 304016, Cadillac number 616282.
Good morning, this is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. Dr. Charles Lucas, MD, Chief of Division of Preventive and Nutritional Medicine, Beaumont Hospital in Birmingham, Michigan, is our guest today. And before we go to the phone calls, I have one more question about the liquid protein diets. Dr. Lucas, how about the effect of protein, particularly animal protein, on bone metabolism and calcium loss?
Well, I don't, you know, in this particular program, we use a very high calcium diet, you know, you're asking the general question, does a high protein diet cause calcium loss?
Well, let's start there.
Sure, I think it does.
Then in your particular dietary regime, are you concerned that you're washing bone out through the urine?
Not really, because we use such a high calcium intake.
But does it compensate? Because all the studies I'm aware of in animal studies and human studies show that you cannot reverse the negative calcium balance by adding more calcium. You can only do it by cutting down on the protein. So have you studied these people to make sure?
Well, the protein isn't that high. It's not much different than the normal protein intake.
Mm. Okay.
So it's about 80 grams of protein. If we go to a higher amount, it can be up to 120 grams of protein. But it isn't that much more protein. What it is it's restricted in carbohydrate, restricted in fat, and protein levels are pretty much the same as a normal diet.
Well, let me ask you something else. One of the concerns that I've heard about this kind of protein supplementation, first of all, as I understand, the reason to do it is to add protein so that the body won't use its own protein. In other words, it's called a protein-sparing diet.
That's right.
But one of the concerns that I've heard expressed is that the body really doesn't do that, and certainly doesn't do it well in areas of heart muscle and does not spare heart muscle loss. And as a result, it doesn't really accomplish, the added protein doesn't really accomplish what it is claimed to accomplish.
Well, there's really no evidence, you know, that studies have been done looking at cardiac function, Holter monitoring, there's been no arrhythmias, there's been no evidence that these diets cause that problem.
Okay.
The original liquid protein diet should be separated from what we're talking about. We're talking about liquid protein diets that did cause that problem.
Okay.
You know, and these were diets that were made from, they were only about 300 calories, they were made from horse's hooves and animal hides, they had no minerals in them, no vitamins, people had hypokalemia, hypomagnesemia, arrhythmias, those kind of things. People felt terrible on those diets.
Right.
Those diets were taken off the market. As a matter of fact, those diets really followed the original description. You know, the diet that we use right now preceded the liquid protein diets. Those were sort of added on by someone who thought they could make something real cheap and make a lot of money with them. So in essence, they gave these diets a very bad name. But these diets have been going on since the 1970s, and they're incredibly safe. And people do feel very well on them. So there is a slightly negative protein balance. But on the other hand, you know, when people lose 100 pounds, it's normal to lose about 25% of that weight as lean mass.
Well, just to clarify, because it's real important for my education, have you studied to see the calcium loss in terms of these kinds of diets? Can we say that you don't lose calcium, which is one of the biggest concerns with high protein intakes, or has it not been studied?
You would lose calcium on a high protein intake, but then again, these are not high protein.
Okay,
these are high protein with respect to the amount of calories.
I understand, but 90 grams of protein is enough to put somebody in negative calcium balance. So what my question is real specifically is, have you studied these?
No, I don't know of anyone who's looked at calcium balance specifically.
Right.
I do remember, though, when the original studies were done by Dr. Verdes and Dr. Knuth in Cleveland, mm-hmm. that they did mineral balances with them. But I can't remember exactly what they found in terms of balance, but I don't believe that there were any significant problems with the diets when they did these balance studies. They
All
did
right.
protein balance as well as mineral balance studies. I don't think they found any problems with them.
Well, if you'd like to share with Dr. Charles Lucas your success or your problems on liquid protein diets, you can give us a call at 707-270-1350 or 1-800-570-TALK or anything. This man is filled with knowledge. He's an internist, an endocrinologist, and a person who has dedicated his life to trying to help people lose weight and become healthier. Admittedly, his methods are a little different than mine, but there are lots of ways to do things out there in the world, folks, and you know that, so we need to find out about many different ways to handle problems. Let's go to our telephones now and talk to Cindy from Richmond. Cindy, you're on with Dr. Charles Lucas. Hello, Cindy.
Hi.
You're on the air. And, of course, everybody remembers we're on a 7-second delay, so you've got to listen to the telephone. Cindy, you're on with Dr. Charles Lucas.
Yes. Thank you for having me on. Just one point I'd like to make, first of all, is that it seems like the ideal diet might be one that you can stay on for the rest of your life rather than trying to go on the liquid route and just use real foods and get this kind of a thing going so that you don't, once you're off the diet, you can continue on and be able to sustain your weight loss.
Did you hear that comment, Dr. Lucas?
Yes, I did, Cindy. Cindy, let me make a point very clear to the audience. People who complain about the fact that liquid diets cause weight regain can't tell me that they've got a program that uses regular food from the very beginning that also has long-term good results. There's very little published information on a 1,200-calorie all-food diet. In fact, I don't know of any. We have data. And so I'm speaking from my own experience, and I challenge anyone to tell me how good their long-term results are. Our long-term results are excellent. We've had people now 10 years who have been who've lost over 100 pounds and kept it all off for 10 years. And we've had people that have kept every ounce. I have a group of people called my valedictorians who kept off their weight for an average of 3.5 years. I have one lady who's 120 pounds lighter now, 6 years later. Our average patient in our clinic, 20% of them are 100 pounds lighter, 3.3 years later. Do you know of any information anywhere that talks about those kinds of results anywhere?
Dr. Lucas, let me just ask.
Using any other kind of diet?
Is the reason that you use the liquid protein first is you want people to see dramatic results initially? Is that why you use it?
No, let me tell you, we did a study. Maybe this will explain it. We did a study a few years ago where we used the 1,200-calorie all formula diet. I don't like to call it liquid because it's really a pudding.
Well, Dr. Lucas, let me have you hold.
Diet, and we compared
Dr.
It
Lucas,
to a 1,200-calorie regular diet.
We're going to have Dr. Lucas hold just for a minute because we need to go to our news. This is Dr. John McDougal on the Northern California Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Charles Lucas. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
You're participating in Active Mind Radio, KSRO 1350 Santa Rosa.
President Clinton is pushing to get some.
Good morning. This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Charles Lucas. He's Chief of Division of Preventive and Nutritional Medicine, Beaumont Hospital, Birmingham, Michigan, a man qualified in internal medicine and endocrinology. And Dr. Lucas, do we have Cindy still on the line? Cindy, we still have you with us? Cindy? Dr. Lucas, do we still have you with us?
Yes, here I am.
Okay, great.
I got cut off.
Well, you know, that does happen.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think Cindy and I finished our conversation, but...
Okay. Well, her question and my response to just kind of fill in was, I mean, it must give people a tremendous amount of gratification to lose these phenomenal amounts of weights initially on a diet simple, like, you know, opening a package of protein powder, and they must get a sense of great accomplishment to lose 50, 60, 70 pounds. I would think that would be the reason to do it initially.
Well, we've had people that have lost 400 pounds on it.
Yes. And, of course, the secret to keeping them, and I do want to emphasize that, low in that weight is to put them on a diet that you consider healthy, which is a high vegetable, low fat diet.
Sure.
Before we go back to our callers, how does your particular approach to obesity fit in with the treatment of various diseases like arthritis, for example? That's how I first got to know you in terms of rheumatoid
sure.
arthritis. Do you see Do you see any connection there, positive or negative?
Right. You know, when we started this program a few years ago, as you know, remember when you came to visit in Detroit, we had discovered that phenomenon about arthritis with this diet. We had a patient with rheumatoid arthritis, and I recall putting her on this diet and saying, well, I didn't know whether I should treat her at all, so I asked a rheumatologist at the university, and they said, well, I don't see any reason why you can't put someone with rheumatoid arthritis on a 600-calorie diet. So we did it, and she kept coming in every week and saying how much better she felt and how her joints didn't hurt anymore, and that's when we discovered that these diets maybe had a role in the, at least in, you know, we didn't know what it was about the diet that worked. We found out later that it was really the low-fat content of the diet that really probably worked. As you know, later others have done research discovering that vegetarian diets, given for a whole year, there's a study from England, produced a remarkable improvement in patients with rheumatoid arthritis. So I think it has a lot to do with the low-fat nature of the diet. We still see people now who come into the program with rheumatoid arthritis who go on this diet and feel better. So we accept it now as a routine that people would feel better who have, on a diet like this.
What other problems do you see benefits with when people lose?
Well, diabetes is incredibly improved. Mm-hmm. We take people off insulin, but, you know, you can do it without this diet. You can do it with a regular diet as long as it's calorically restricted. I like the low-carb diet for diabetics. I know there's a big argument about whether low-carb is better than high-carb, but we sort of agree with the Stanford group and the group from Dallas that the low-carb diet is really the way to treat people with diabetes.
So
we use a low-carb diet, and we oftentimes will take the, instead of using a formula diet, which is high-protein, low-carb, we'll use a turkey, chicken, fish, vegetable salad diet, which is almost the same mix, you say, protein and carbohydrate, and use that kind of diet. And I've taken people off, as you have too, off 100, 200 units of insulin in a very short period of time and gotten their numbers corrected. We've had someone recently with triglycerides of 8,000 who had pancreatitis, and that person now has got normal everything. You know, within a month, everything was normal by putting them on the right kind of diet.
This is one of the things that I think my listeners find somewhat disturbing, because I had Dr. Robert Atkins on the show here a couple of months ago, and he described similar results with a low-carbohydrate diet that I claim with a high-carbohydrate diet.
Right.
And you well know the people at the University of Kentucky, the Anderson Group, they
sure
use a high-carbohydrate diet and get phenomenal results, the same kind that you're talking about. How do you explain that kind of discrepancy?
Well, you know, I've read Anderson's paper recently, because I'm a low-carb guy myself. And Anderson says that when you put people on a high-carb diet, the diabetes doesn't get better right away. It takes a little longer. And I think it's just a matter of weight loss to occur. You know, it's a much slower process. With the low-carb diet, I think you get the effect on the blood sugar immediately. We get people with normal blood sugar within 3 days, for example, you know. If they're going to come down, you'll see it very rapidly. Now, you'll get an improvement in 3 days, but to get the final improvement, they have to lose a lot of weight. And I think what Anderson is seeing is the effect of the high-carb diet on weight loss, because it's a low-calorie diet, too. You see, it's not just a high-carb diet. It's a diet that's restricted in calories.
See, I'll have to read his new paper, because
it's a wonderful paper. If I think of it, I'll send it to you. But he reviewed, it's a very beautiful review, the whole subject, and he talks about this low-carb, high-carb business. But what we have found, and what other people have found as well, is that the low-carb diets really make it, like, and I'm talking about really low, I'm talking about 40% carb, high olive oil diet. That kind of diet really improves lipids, particularly triglycerides and HDL.
Right,
and I have one lady, for example, I got to tell you this case. She was on a Pritikin diet, which is, you know, everyone knows about the Pritikin diet. And she was on a Pritikin diet and had high triglycerides and a low HDL, and came to see me because she didn't want to go on drugs, her doctor sent her to me. And I put her on the 40% carbohydrate diet and gave her olive oil and kept everything else the same. And I told her not to eat any starches at all. And within a week, 2 weeks, her lipids were completely normal. Her triglycerides went from 355 to under 100, and her HDLs went up from about 43 to 59.
All right, let me ask you another question.
This is triglyceride-induced hypertriglyceride, carbohydrate-induced hypertriglyceridemia is the word I'm looking
for. All right, but let me ask you another question that Dr. Atkins could not give me a satisfactory answer to.
Yeah.
The kind of diet you described, high in fish, high in turkey, high in animal protein, is the diet that's been associated with heart disease
yeah.
and cancer, And, you know, you get changes in numbers, but do you get people healthier? I mean, this is a fiber-free diet that has to lead to constipation, has to lead to bowel problems like diverticulosis, diverticulitis.
Sure.
You know, and you're aware of the association between high carbohydrate and high fat diets and low incidence of these problems. So I want you to think about that for a minute. You may be getting changes in numbers like weight, like blood pressure, like blood sugar, like triglycerides, but are you getting healthier people by feeding them a high-meat diet? This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Charles Lucas. He's Chief of Division of Prevention and Nutritional Medicine, Beaumont Hospital, Birmingham, Michigan. This is Dr. John McDougall. We'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Your beautiful yard.
This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Charles Lucas, and I have two questions before we go to callers for Dr. Lucas, and I want to get those in so that I get them answered. One is how can you take a diet high in cholesterol, a diet made of turkey, fish, beef, and so on, chicken, a diet high in cholesterol, and feed it to people and end up with healthy people? Likewise, olive oil has been implicated in the development of cancer, certainly in animal studies. And so my concern is you may be getting changes in numbers, but are you getting healthier people? And the second question I have for you, Dr. Lucas, is when we first started talking on this show, you said that you use a high vegetable diet for maintenance, and now you're telling me you use a low vegetable diet for treatment. I mean, how do these things fit in together so you have some consistency and belief?
High vegetable diet. My diet is basically vegetables.
Okay, it's basically, but we were just talking about a diet that had no vegetables.
No. Or when they start out, you mean? When they start out to lose weight, sure. When they start to lose weight, they're on a high-protein diet that's just formula, just formula with protein and low carbohydrate and low fat.
But how about the one with turkey and chicken and fish?
That turkey, chicken, and fish is later. Now, remember, the turkey, chicken, and fish are used as additives to this diet, but my basic diet is my basic food group is vegetables.
So that's a high-carbohydrate diet. See, this is how I'm getting confused.
Well, it doesn't have to be. If you don't, you have to use, you know, a lot of vegetables, but you can put enough protein in it and some olive oil into it. Now, I'm talking about people now who don't have a weight problem. You know, when we're looking at people with weight problems, we're dealing with a group of people. You have to be very careful about what you put into their diet, because one of the things that we've found that people abuse, they get back to their old foods, you know, the cheeses and the sweets and the spreads and the peanut butter and all that kind of stuff. I find that the important thing is for them to concentrate on eating lots of vegetables and salads and keep their fat intake low, as well as keeping their starch intake low, you know, their breads and those kind of foods.
Well, that certainly would encourage weight loss. I have no doubt about that.
But it's also good for maintaining weight loss, too.
Well, that's what would concern me, because I find people who try and live on broccoli, cauliflower, and lettuce to starve to death. And they don't get satisfaction from it, and that's why I would find that myself personally, and also as a practitioner, very difficult to prescribe to people, because there's very little satisfaction of appetite.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're dealing with people who have been 100 pounds overweight for most of their lives, we're dealing with people with an eating disorder, and maybe that's where you and I are not disagreeing, but I think we're not seeing each other's side. The person with 100 pounds overweight has an eating disorder, and one of the things that people get into when they have eating disorders are starches and carbohydrates. They get into pastas, they get into breads, they get into pretzels, crackers, they eat foods that are cereals, for example, right out of a cereal box, they eat sweets. There is a tendency to overeat carbohydrate. So what I try to do is to get them to get their carbohydrate out of vegetables. And if I can get them to get them all out of vegetables, even to the point of eating things like sweet potatoes and garbanzo beans and those kind of things, then I can get them eating foods which are not going to be as fattening.
You like sweet potatoes and garbanzo beans?
Pardon me?
You like sweet potatoes and garbanzo beans?
Oh, sure.
Well, they're very high in carbohydrate.
Well, they are, but I'm talking
they're
about
starches.
Instead of eating bread, I would rather them eat those kind of foods.
Then one last question. I'm not going to ask anymore, because there's all kinds of callers on. Why are there no fat Chinese?
Why what?
Are there no fat Chinese in China?
I can't hear you very well, John. What was the question again?
Why are there no fat Chinese in China?
You know, they do exercise a lot more than we do, and they eat a low-fat diet.
A high starch diet. They live on rice.
They do, but they also don't have a lot of food available. You know, one of the big problems that our people have, you know, if you talk to our patients, their breakfast, lunch, and dinners are not all that bad. It's what they eat between meals that really bother you.
Maybe it's the mixing of the fat with the starch that's the problem.
Yeah, they eat an awful lot of stuff. And, you know, in the old country where my parents came from, they eat breakfast, small breakfast, big lunch, a big, you know, noon meal and a small dinner meal, but they don't eat between meals. There's no food. If you open up their refrigerators, there's nothing in them.
Okay. This is Dr. John McDougall. My guest is Dr. Charles Lucas. Let's go to Michael in Sacramento. Hello, Michael. Michael, you're on with Dr. Lucas. Hello, Michael.
Yes.
Hi, Michael.
I have two questions. The first one is on prostate, and the second one is on high blood cholesterol.
Well, would you feel comfortable answering both questions, Dr. Lucas?
Sure.
Okay.
One at a time, though.
Okay. On the prostate, I've had excellent health all my life, but a recent rectal exam came up with a growth on the prostate, and they took the PSA test, which proved 0.94 on the scale. My question is, how often do you think I ought to take the PSA test, and how concerned should I be about the growth?
Well, your PSA is normal from what, if I gather that correctly, right?
Yes, it is.
Right, and it's, so it's, you know, it looks as though there's something there, but it isn't, it is, I think you need to be followed with probably a rectal examination by your doctor, and a PSA test, too, and I would say probably in 6 months.
Okay.
And how about the cholesterol question, Michael?
Okay, on the cholesterol, first of all, a little history. My father died at the age of 54 with a heart attack, so this has a lot to do with my concern about the high cholesterol. I'm somewhat angelic when it comes to a diet. I do all the right things, all the things that both of you talk about. My reading is 274. With diet, I was able to bring it down to 269. I don't understand much about the HDL and the LDL and the triglycerides, but with two examinations through physicians, they both suggested that I go on medication, which I have refused to do because I'm concerned about the contraindications. So I wonder if you have a comment on
that.
Yeah,
could you comment? When you get somebody with a high cholesterol like this that doesn't respond to a good diet, do you put them on cholesterol-lowering drugs?
Well, no, I need to know what his triglycerides are, John. What are your triglycerides?
Well, I don't know what they are.
Are they high or low?
The only thing I can say is that in two cases with physicians examining the blood count, that they apparently were out of whack because both of them suggested that I go on medication.
Michael and Dr. Lucas, I have to hold you there because we need to take a commercial break. This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. We'll be back with you in just a moment. With that indigestion-producing grease ball that most of us were raised on. This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. Back with you in a moment. This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Charles Lucas, and let's go talk to Bill in Santa Rosa. Bill, you're on with Dr. Lucas.
Hi, Bill.
Bill, we have you on the air. No, let's see. We still have Bill? I'll try you one more time, Bill.
Glad to talk to you.
All right. We have Bill on with Dr. Lucas.
Hello.
Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. I want to highly recommend Dr. McDougall. I think he saved my life.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I'm a diabetic, and I've got rheumatoid arthritis. And for 5 weeks, I've had two abscesses on my foot, and they won't heal.
Uh-huh.
And I've taken Cipro and Trentol medicine,
uh-huh.
and didn't help a whole lot.
Uh-huh.
And then my neighbor told me about vitamin E, 400.
Uh-huh.
And I rubbed that on those two sores, doctor, and believe it, it's a miracle. Within 3 hours, the pain was gone.
Really?
Can you comment on that, or have you ever heard of that?
No, I can't. I've never heard that before. Maybe Dr. McDougall can comment on that.
No, I can't, but he brings up an interesting subject, Bill does. Bill came in on diabetic pills, and, of course, my reflex is to take them off diabetic pills, but I know you feel completely different about, or at least last time we talked about, giving people diabetic pills, and I'd like to ask you if you still feel the same way and how you justify, Dr. Charles Lucas, how you justify the statement that they still put in the 1993 physician's desk reference that says that taking these pills will increase your risk of dying of heart disease by 2.5 times over the next 5 to 8 year period.
Sure.
I mean, doesn't that scare the heck out of you when you prescribe diabetic pills
to
people?
Well, you know, that's a study that I think it was called the
UDGP study. UDGP study.
Yeah, UGDP study, right.
Yeah.
And I think that study was flawed.
But if it was flawed and it was discredited, why under every diabetic?
Well, you have to ask the people who you have to ask the FDA. But the study, as far as I'm concerned, was flawed. And at least in our area, at Michigan, when I was at Michigan at the time, we looked at all that information. And the problem is that when the study was designed, it wasn't designed to answer that question. That wasn't the purpose of it. So as a result, there wasn't equality in the four groups of patients who were on different treatments, and there were four different treatments.
Well, let me before we get into
that, the people who were in the treatment of that who were in the treatment group that got the oral medications you're talking about had more risk factors for heart disease than the other groups did.
Well, if it's so clear that that's the case, then answer a more simple question for me, and that is why do they continue and have continued for the last 21 years to put this special warning in heavy black print?
Because it was a study that was funded by the government, and maybe they don't want to, you know.
The drug companies.
It's what they're reporting. It's what the study reported, but most iodologists just ignore that completely.
Yeah, I know, but is that right?
It is right. I don't think there's any evidence that those things cause any problems.
Then if there wasn't the evidence, my challenge to you and anybody else that recommends them, and
like
to the drug companies.
There was a study that came out that showed that a low-fat diet didn't help rheumatoid arthritis, and there were 10 studies that showed, you know what I mean? Would you have
yes,
to sort of look at each study and say, well, what is it about this thing? Why doesn't it agree with
what we
normally observe, you see?
Dr. Lucas, then I'm gonna throw that right back to you. If that was the case, then you cite me the studies that were done that shows that diabetic pills are safe and do not increase the risk of dying of heart disease. There have been none done. You see,
sure,
the study stands, and it has to have validity, or the drug companies wouldn't waste the heavy black print putting in the warning every time in the PDR under every diabetic pill.
You
understand my concern? I just can't rationalize, you know, what's going on. It disturbs me terribly. Anyways, let's go. I promise to go back to
They do control blood sugar, though.
Yeah, well, that's fine. You can also lower blood pressure with arsenic by killing the patient. This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network, and we have Stanley from Sacramento on the line. Stanley, you're not supposed to listen to the radio when you're on this show now.
Okay, I'm glad I got through.
Yes, you're on.
You have to have the patience of Job. I'll turn this radio down.
Well, please do.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Can I talk to you?
Please. It's
okay,
all
I'm
yours.
I'm using the telephone, so it's hard to figure out where am I at.
No excuses, Stanley. Just cut to it, please.
Okay, I have a number of comments to make. I guess I have to take... First of all, Dr. McDougall, you're right in the way you talk to people because you're straightforward. I just thought I'd get that in. I'm concerned about the words when you use carbohydrate. When you say carbohydrate, I think of mashed potatoes, I think of white bread, I think of sugar, I think of pastries, and so on.
Stanley, could
the
I cut you right to a question?
Complex carbohydrate. Complex. Right. Whole foods.
Stanley, can I cut you right to a question?
If people who are overweight ate whole foods, they would be okay. I think what Dr. Lucas is doing is probably very, very good for them. Stanley,
yes. this is not open for commentary. What I'd like to have is, do you have a question for Dr. Lucas?
Okay, I just wanted to comment.
I know you did, but Dr. Lucas is our guest today. Someday you'll be our guest. We have Ricky from Sacramento on the line. Hello, Ricky, you're on the air. Ricky, we have you from Sacramento talking to Dr. Charles Lucas.
Hi, this is Ricky.
Nice to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. It's the first time I've ever called in.
Well, it's all yours for the next 2.5 minutes.
What I wanted to ask is, I have an eating disorder which I've had for years, and I just went on the McDougal diet 4 weeks ago. And I'm also a migraine sufferer. But what I'm wondering about is I am constantly wanting to eat. It's just, and that's. I guess the crux of my whole problem is never feeling really fulfilled.
What do you think about that, Dr. Lucas? She's on a high-carbohydrate diet and constantly wants to eat.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard for me to comment on that. Some people are using medications like Prozac and Zoloft to help people with eating disorders to quell that craving, so that's always an option that could be added to it. I haven't found them that useful myself.
They put me on that about a year ago, and I took it for one day and just couldn't handle it.
Right. you know, there are organizations, Overeaters Anonymous. I've had patients with that problem who've gone to those. I have one woman who went every night for 3 months when she first started, and she eventually solved her problem. So I think there are ways of dealing with it. It doesn't mean that you should do that at the exception of Dr. McDougall's program. You should do it with it, perhaps.
Right.
Because I think that sometimes it takes that kind of daily intensity, like going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting every day. It takes that kind of intensity to try to lick this problem. But there are, one of my patients who's lost a lot of weight, has been very successful, eats vegetables. She says, I cannot allow myself to go without eating for 3 hours, otherwise I'd make the wrong choice. I said, it's very important not to go hungry. So if you're going to be following any kind of a program, you probably need to eat frequently, and you probably should always have food available that's the right food, instead of coming in hungry and then making a bad choice.
Well, Dr. Lucas, I'm going to have to close this very interesting hour. It's really a pleasure to have you back on the show, and you're a very stimulating man and very articulate, and I look forward to your new book. Thank you very much for spending the time with us. This is Dr. John McDougall on the Northern California Radio Network, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Interesting show on gardening.